Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. A Russian-American lobbyist told Associated Press he attended a June 2016 meeting with President Trump's son, Donald Jr., members of the Trump campaign team, and a Russian lawyer, marking another shift in the account of a discussion that was billed as part of a Russian government effort to help the Republicans' White House campaign. AP reporter Desmond Butler.
What we learned today is that the attendance list of the meeting that's now well known between Donald Trump Jr. and a Russian lawyer was wider than we thought. And it included a associate of the lawyer who is a Russian-American lobbyist named Rinat Akhmetshin.
The meeting has heightened questions about whether the Trump campaign coordinated with the Russian government during the election, which is the focus of a federal and congressional investigation. The Pentagon says the top Islamic State official in Afghanistan, Abu Sayyid, has been killed in a U.S. airstrike. U.S. Defense Chief Jim Mattis says it's a sign U.S. efforts to counter IS in Afghanistan are going in the right direction. The U.S. Justice Department wants the U.S. Supreme Court to block a lower court ruling that exempted grandparents of people living in the United States from President Trump's travel ban. The Supreme Court ruled in late June the Trump travel ban could be partially implemented ahead of the court's full hearing on the order later in the year. The court also said the government had to refrain from blocking travel to the U.S. by people who had a bona fide relationship to a person or entity already in the United States. This is VOA News. The battle for the Iraqi city of Mosul has gone underground as helicopters hover over the city. Surviving Islamic State militants, both men and women, are now all wearing suicide vests and fighting from basements and tunnels under the decimated sliver of land they still control. VOA's Heather Murdoch reports from that scene.
Helicopters fly low over other parts of Mosul, no longer under threat from IS fire from the ground. But despite a resounding declaration of victory early this week, militants continue to fight from under the rubble they occupy, no more than about 120 meters wide. Soldiers say most surviving militants are foreign, and men, women, and children are wearing suicide vests. The battle is also slowed by close quarters after Iraqi soldiers were injured in airstrikes against nearby IS targets.
Turkey Saturday is marking the one-year anniversary of a defeated military coup. Since then, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has dismissed at least 100,000 civil servants he has characterized as supporters of the aborted coup. The government has arrested another 50,000 people. Turkish officials have declared July 15th a national holiday of democracy and unity. On Friday, Turkey fired more than 7,000 police officers, government officials, and academics. Iraq's military may try to eradicate the Islamic State terror group's remaining forces by simultaneously attacking the terror group on multiple fronts in the hopes of taking advantage of infighting and a weakened leadership. The U.S. Defense Department estimated IS forces inflicted a 40% casualty rate on Iraq's elite counterterrorism service in the 9 months it took for them to reclaim the city. And the U.S. commander of the Global Coalition Against IS described the fighting in Mosul as the most extended and brutal combat he's ever witnessed. The ashes of Chinese dissident and Nobel Peace Laureate Liu Xiaobo were scattered at sea Saturday after a muted cremation ceremony that was under government watch. Liu, China's best-known human rights prisoner, died Thursday at the age of 61 following a high-profile battle with liver cancer that made his death as controversial as his life. He spent his last 8 years as a prisoner of conscience and died at a hospital where he had been moved from his prison cell in the final stage of his illness. The Judicial Bureau announced the cause of death as multiple organ failure. Pakistan says it finds it necessary to build a fence along its long porous border with Afghanistan, in part because of a lack of cooperation from authorities in Kabul. The border region has long been a source of instability, with militant groups, terrorists, and smugglers using the remote mountainous terrain as cover. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The president just finished with the Catholic bishops, led by the Archbishop of Lusaka, who is the head of the Catholic Church in Zambia. They discussed a wide range of issues, mostly pertaining to governance.
The Zambian President Edgar Lungu meets Catholic bishops in the capital, Lusaka.
We do not recognize the terms that are being used about strongholds and where certain candidates are almost being barred from going to certain places, because they are perceived as strongholds of a particular candidate.
The Kenyan Electoral Commission expresses concern about incidents of intolerance and violence ahead of the upcoming August polls.
I am prepared, but the time is very small to be prepared, because we have 1 week since the 7th of July to be prepared.
And campaigning officially begins Friday in Rwanda as two candidates seek to unseat longtime incumbent President Paul Kagame. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Zambian President Edgar Lungu met Catholic bishops in the capital, Lusaka, Friday. The meeting forms part of the efforts by the bishops to begin the process to organize dialogue and reconciliation between leaders of the ruling party, the Patriotic Front, and the main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND. The leader of the UPND, Hakainde Hichilema, is in maximum security prison. He awaits trial as he faces treason charges after his convoy refused to give way to President Lungu's motorcade earlier this year. Hichilema has so far refused to accept the victory of President Lungu in the last presidential election. To learn more about Friday's meeting, I reach Amos Chanda, spokesman for the Zambian president.
Very successful meeting. The president just finished with the Catholic bishops, led by the Archbishop of Lusaka, who is the head of the Catholic Church in Zambia. They discussed a wide range of issues, mostly pertaining to governance. And at the heart of this discussion was the need for the two leaders of the country, that is the ruling party and the main opposition, to commit to a genuine process of reconciliation based on a genuine dialogue. And the bishops informed the president that they were seeking his blessing to go and speak to Mr. Hakainde Hichilema, to inform him that he must open the door, commit to a civil process that should lead to a genuine reconciliation.
How was the president's reaction when they requested for a genuine, unconditional dialogue with the main opposition to address some of their concerns about governance? How did the president take it?
The president responded positively and almost immediately. He was speaking off script and said, he welcomed that, and he said, maybe this is just an opportunity. He said to them, go and ask the opposition leader, if you won election, by what margin, go and ask him what are his grievances. Because the president said he has faced it so. He has asked every monitor, American Freedom House, and he said to them, including the monitoring group that the Catholic Church had, he said, all of them have said that I won election. So, my lord, can you yourselves go and ask my brother what his grievances are? And he said that he was open to dialogue, but he insisted that go and ask him, as long as the dialogue is not to come and argue who is the president and who is not. But nevertheless, in the broader scheme of things, he said that he had no problem.
Recently, some religious groups were critical of the president, and some of them even accused him of being a dictator, among other issues. Were some of these raised?
Yes. The head of that group that issued that statement was the leader of the negotiations of the meeting today, was the one who raised the statement on behalf of the Catholic bishops. And when the president raised the issue about the dictatorship, the archbishop ignored it and said that they were committed. They thought that the Zambian government and the Catholic Church were united on what is good for the Zambian people, and they wanted to focus on that.
looking at the president's willingness to have genuine negotiations with the opposition leader and other groups in the country, when do you anticipate this happening, if indeed Hakainde Hichilema, the main opposition leader, agrees to be part of the dialogue with President Edgar Chagwa Lungu?
The president left all these things in the hands of the opposition and in the hands of the Catholic bishops who are proposing this dialogue. And I think that the president took note of the concerns of the bishops, because they outright, you know, when I spoke on radio, I was criticized. I characterized the fires that are happening in Lusaka and elsewhere as acts of arson. The Catholic bishops were categorical. They did not say electrical faults resulting in banning of markets. They said they decry and condemn in the strongest terms the acts of arson, particularly the touching of the Lusaka city market, and condemn further any acts of economic sabotage meant to cripple the economy. Those were the words of the bishop. So the president says this is what he has been advocating, open dialogue. They went further and reminded the president that they remember the president calling for dialogue in May last year. That was way before the general election. And they regretted that the cathedral meeting, that meeting that was convened by the Catholic bishops, was not very successful. And as a result, we went into elections as a divided nation, and we emerged out of there divided.
Did the Catholic bishops offer themselves as mediators to help with the mediation of the genuine dialogue that they proposed?
Yes, they did, and they were quite humble about it. They said they were just one single unit within the broad spectrum of Zambian society. They were ready to lead these negotiations, but they said that any other eminent persons or groups can be invited to be part of that.
Amos Chanda is the spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He spoke with me from Lusaka. The Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC, has expressed concern about growing intolerance and violence leading up to the August 8th general election. The electoral body has since deployed two teams to begin investigations in parts of the country where there have been incidents of violence and tension. The electoral body has since warned political parties and their supporters that any partisan who violates the electoral code of conduct will face punitive action. For more on the current political climate, I reached Dr. Roslyn Kwamboka Akombe, Commissioner at the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission.
The IEBC has strongly condemned cases of political intolerance that we have witnessed in the past few days. We had an incident in which the Right Honourable Raila Odinga was campaigning in some parts of the country, and he was shot down and there was violence. We also had an incident in which His Excellency Uhuru Kenyatta was also campaigning, and he was also shot down, and there were cases of violence. And what we are saying as a commission is that, you know, we do not recognize the terms that are being used about strongholds and where certain candidates are almost being barred from going to certain places because they are perceived strongholds of a particular candidate. We strongly condemn that, and we believe that any Kenyan has the liberty to campaign in any place in the country, and those rights have to be protected.
Is the IEBC compiling these incidents, and are there any investigations ongoing to really ascertain the gravity of your concern?
Yes, Chairman Chebukati has sent out two teams. He has sent one team to Kabarnet, where there were incidents of political intolerance, and he has also sent another team to a place called Sika to also investigate, and the commission is available once we have the report to sit, look at those cases, and determine what action to take. I mean, the commission has already, in certain cases where we have seen violence, the commission has already fined candidates. The commission has already warned candidates in certain places, and in some places we have taken the extent of even suspending campaigns for a period of time. And so those are some of the things that the commission would consider once we receive the reports from those two areas in which we have sent our investigators.
Some Kenyans I spoke with were concerned about some of these reports because not long ago in 2007, when the election results were disputed, there were incidents of post-election violence. Is the IEBC stepping up its education campaign to calm tensions ahead of the election?
Absolutely. We are doing our voter education programs. We are collaborating with other agencies that have a responsibility for rule of law in the country to increase our campaigns, send out messages of peace. But more importantly for us as a commission is to try and control these things before they go out of hand. And that is why we have been sitting as a commission looking at several cases that are brought before us and meeting out fines and punishment as quickly as possible, because in our view, and we have seen actually that in cases in which we have taken immediate action, we have seen less violence in those places. I'll give an example of a county called Bungoma, where we had the two governor candidates running for the gubernatorial position involved in violence, and we fined both candidates $1 million each. And since that has happened, Bungoma has been one of the most quiet places in the country. So, you know, what we want to do is to make sure that when we see acts of violence being taken, that we work and deal with them immediately. We know that the Ministry of Internal Security has also beefed up and is working and looking at all these cases to be able to take action.
If the IEBC determines a candidate has been using languages to incite people to violence, will the IEBC be bold enough to perhaps prevent that candidate from contesting an election as a deterrent to other candidates in the run-up to the election?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, the commission has already actually barred one candidate who was running for the member of parliament from. We've taken that person out of the ballot. The ballots were being printed at the time, and we took the person out of the ballot. I mean, so the commission has the authority given to it by the people of Kenya to ensure that we address these issues of violation of the code of conduct. So should we get cases that warrant us to take that action, we will. But obviously, we are cautious in how we handle those cases to ensure that the kind of actions that we take or the kind of sanctions that we have are proportionate to the type of offense that is being committed. But we will not hesitate to take action to avoid any violence in the country.
Dr. Roslyn Kwamboka Akombe is a commissioner at the Kenyan Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, or IEBC. She spoke with me from the capital, Nairobi. The Rwandan President Paul Kagame told supporters at his first campaign rally Friday that the results of the upcoming election were known in 2015, when more than 4 million Rwandans petitioned parliament to change the constitution to allow him to run again. Kagame said his critics cannot change the will of the people. He has been in power since the end of the Rwandan genocide in 1994. Philippe Mpayimana is an independent candidate who is challenging Kagame in the election. I reached him in the Rwandan capital, Kigali, shortly after the Electoral Commission officially signaled campaigning to begin for the August 4 elections.
Yes, I am prepared, but the time is very small to be prepared because we have 1 week since the 7th of July to be prepared. And we began today to the meetings, and I try the best I can.
How is your campaign going so far after the Electoral Commission officially sanctioned for all the candidates to begin campaigning ahead of the election?
Yes, the campaign began, and we have been in the eastern province of Rwanda, Bugesera district. We have been in three localities, and we are happy that people are interested to listen to the program, to ask questions, and we will continue. Every day we have two or three sessions to meet the people.
Well, I understand you are not drawing a lot of people to your campaign. You have about maximum 200 people only showing up to your rallies. Why is this so?
I am independent. I have not used many means of communication, but it is not a big problem because the important is to go and to begin. In our society, they use mouth-to-mouth communication, and I hope they will continue to follow me. It is not a matter of the number of people. I have confidence in the following days.
Some people are saying you are just being a joke and that you don't have any clear chance to challenge incumbent President Paul Kagame in next month's election. What do you say to that?
They can say that I am a small candidate, a weak one. But the important is that I am the starting block of our democracy. I'm there to give a good example. I have thought much enough about what I am doing. I'm not joking, but it's not easy, of course. But I'm serious, and people is interested to the challenge I am bringing in this democratic process.
Previous elections have had President Paul Kagame chalking over 90% of the vote. So you are going to compete, some people say, with only less than 10% of the remaining vote count with Frank Habineza, who has been the most significant, they said, of the opposition candidate in Rwanda. What are your thoughts about this assessment?
I'm fighting against the unanimity, against the 10% vote, and I am fighting against the lack of the gaps of our culture, mentalities that are only following that they don't want to hear and to participate in the debate. Then my wish is to challenge that mentality and not to search for zero or one, but something over 20, 30 or 50 or 100 to win. But those who are neglecting my effort, I think they don't understand the problem we are facing, our mentality.
What message are you passing on to the people of Rwanda during your campaigns to convince them to vote for you next month?
Everybody who is listening to me is satisfied. The problem is that many of people are not coming to the meeting. Then my advice to everyone is to try to listen, to come and listen.
Philippe Mpayimana is a Rwandan independent presidential candidate. He spoke with me from Kigali.
A proposed amendment to the Ugandan law that seeks to provide for compulsory acquisition of land for government development projects has been met with suspicion, with sections of Ugandans now accusing the government of trying to grab their land. The draft proposals tabled in Parliament on Friday seeks to amend the Land Act of 1998 to ease government takeover of private land. The administration argues that the land amendment law is urgent because of several infrastructural projects that have stalled in its absence. Wilfred Niwagaba is an opposition member of parliament. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in the capital, Kampala, for his reaction to the amendment.
My immediate reaction is that there is no good faith from government. We know as a matter of fact that when the constitution was promulgated in 1995, the president expressed openly his reservations about the articles relating to land, where the members of the constituent assembly had vested the land into the citizens of Uganda. And because President Museveni is, in actual fact, for intents and purposes, the government of Uganda, he believes and feels he should be the landlord of the entire land in Uganda. It is because of that, he is doing that to basically military satisfy his cherished dream. Because even if you ask government to deal with a number of projects which have failed to take off because citizens have refused or have disputed the amount of compensation, it can't be more than even 2%. So there is no reason for bringing the deal as they have brought, but it is only to satisfy the ego of President Museveni, who wants to be the sole controller of all land and determine who gets which land, what project is done where, and the right. So it's not in a good faith.
There is a lot of concern among the people there, according to reports we get. Is it because the president has his hands all over the land issues, and especially as far as giving out, dishing out land to so-called foreign investors is concerned?
Of course, admitted that most of us Ugandans have seen lost the trust and confidence in the president of the government, and as far as the management of public resources is concerned, you will realize that the land that legitimately belonged to government, how it has been given away, in the most cases, to pseudo and fake investors. If you came to Ghana and saw the entire land that originally belonged, that housed the Naguru and the Sanda estate, which was donated to a company that has since done nothing, go to Shimon, a school which was demolished, allegedly to put up a hotel that has not existed since then. Go to Namas, the industrial area. So the experience Ghanaians have gotten of his management of the public land itself leaves a lot to be desired. So if even now goes and encroaches the private individual property, what will happen?
This bill has been tabled amidst a lot of debate about the impending or the suspected amendment to the age limit of the president. Is this a prerequisite to that amendment coming as well? Do you foresee it coming shortly?
Of course, he wants the two. One, because his desire is to rule until he dies. He believes the best way to control Uganda and his remaining years of the presidency is also to control the entire resource which Ugandans have, the basic resource they have, which is land. So the two are closely interrelated and intertwined.
Wilfred Niwagaba is an opposition member of the Ugandan Parliament. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kampala. A leading human rights group is calling for an end to the death penalty in Ghana. Amnesty International says there's been no progress on abolishing it since the recommendation by the Constitution Review Commission in 2011. Amnesty says there are 148 death row prisoners in grim conditions and that less than a quarter have been able to appeal their cases. Sabrina Martinez, West Africa researcher for Amnesty, viewers William Eagle asked her about the group's latest findings on conditions within the Ghanaian prisons.
Amnesty International was concerned after interviewing 107 prisoners for death row in Ghana. We found many violations of fair trial issues. Only a quarter of prisoners, like one in four, have been able to appeal due to lack of access to legal aid and lack of information about the appeal system. Although many prisoners, about three quarters, did have a lawyer at trial level provided by the Legal Aid Service, many prisoners complained that the lawyers did not turn up at trial or ask for money, or they only got a lawyer very late in their trial. The other concern was prison conditions. We found that the male section of the prison was very overcrowded, the cells were very small and quite claustrophobic. Prisoners complained about lack of access to medical care. The prison service has told us that six prisoners on death row are considered to be mentally ill. And under international prison standards, mentally ill prisoners should not be sentenced to death and should be detained in medical facilities. We also found that death row prisoners are very isolated. They're not allowed access to recreational or educational facilities. And this really exacerbates their feeling of isolation and contributes to their mental and physical deterioration.
There's been no progress made since the Constitutional Review Commission suggested that conditions be improved. This was in 2011. What did the Constitutional Review Commission find, and why has there been no progress made?
In 2011, the Constitutional Review Commission did recommend that Ghana should abolish the death penalty. They made many arguments for this, including history has shown that having the death penalty doesn't reduce crime. And just based on human rights principles, death penalty should be abolished. However, there have been delays in this constitutional review process, and now with the new government that's been elected, it's very unclear about whether they will follow through.
What are you calling on the government of Ghana to do?
Well, Amnesty International is calling on the government to abolish the death penalty, where 105 countries in the world have, you know, moved to abolition, and that includes 19 countries in Africa. However, no country in Anglophone West Africa has yet to abolish the death penalty, and we certainly hope that Ghana will be one of the first to follow through. We're also...
That's Sabrina Martini of Amnesty International. She spoke with viewers William Eagle from Washington. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And it's time for music from our African collection.
I'm so in love with you, baby. Oh, anything you want me to, baby. Oh, I still wanna give you to, baby. Baby, dance to my schools. Then go put this love on you. Yeah, don't go low. Don't go low, yeah, don't go low. Don't go low. Don't go low. Don't go low, yeah, don't go low. Don't go low. Now love I see for your eyes, I give all that you need and I won't think twice. It's double six when I throw the dice, yo. Oh girl, I'm loving your size, yo. There is no deceiving, with you girl I'm winning. The way you do the things you do, you make me scream what I'm feeling. Oh girl, you give me the healing, I'm down for your feeling. The way you do the things you do, you make me scream what I'm feeling. That I'm so in love with you, baby. Oh, anything you want me to, baby. Oh, I still wanna give you to, baby. Baby, dance to my schools. Then go put this love on you. Yeah, don't go low. Don't go low, yeah, don't go low. Don't go low.
Don't go low, yeah, don't go low.
Don't go low. Don't go low, yeah, don't go low. Don't go low.
Jumbo low, up I'm gonna get today, my baby. Then go no, say me and you will not play, my baby. Then go say anything where they wanna say, my baby. We go be anything that we wanna be. I'm in love with you, baby girl, I'm in love with you. Wanna dance with you, baby girl, wanna dance with you. Baby, click a tie, if they get on a demon, baby, dance to my sukus, baby, muna gig a
Jumbolo, yeah, Jumbolo, 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 ah, ah, Jumbolo, baby, yeah, Jumbolo, 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 yeah, Jumbolo, Jumbolo,
my sweetie potato, Jumbolo, my sweetie potato,
of course,
Jumbolo, show me what they know.
You don't know. Are you ready now? Let me go show them.
Jare, show them.
Mr. Flavor, party on!
Let's go, let's go. Boy, hey, yeah. Crack it.
See them boys, them are jumping. The way you jiggle, wiggle, it on your front end.
Front end.
All you do is make them confused. Hey. Some of them, them are shouting. There's a thing, them are seeing, them are doubting. Hey. It's all about you breaking the rules. Shaking, hope you're not faking it.
Backing it.
Cause your body is what I need to set you free.
Set you free.
Yes, I know you know we know exactly what I feel.
Hey.
You want it, yeah,
so
yeah, come on, yeah.
Sexy, sexy, sexy. I want some photo, photo, photo. con de pium 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 pium. Waka waka baby, uru uru baby, kona kona baby. And I go tell my mama, and I go tell my papa, and I go tell them say, you be waka waka baby, you be chuku chuku baby.
twelve for the money and back on my way. Go.
Obiantone coalition. Obiantone coalition. Yeah, be Obiantone coalition.
What else?
For day. Obiantone coalition. Obiantone coalition.
Abba.
Obiantone coalition. Cocoa.
Memma would nip a be and boo a bonfia. I hope a promo yen in Abu Huntia. Or ya were town for Jano Manivia. Yambuamu a moonsina boompia. Go,
Sawupe, Muanio, many naidi. Nana yamini, awakano, nebebe mo. Sawuma, usa, swabi, ponina, tutu. So my party don't lose God. Kawako, my toy.
Everybody sing it, hallelujah.
Yeah.
Hallelujah, everybody sing it, hallelujah, hallelujah,
make me sing, oh,
oh yeah,
I say happy sing, oh,
oh yeah. Namu fisa me shiasi, me koya masamba, che, aho chire kakira me fe munti, ne wamo se ma wai mini dama, mwini ne uono, namu fisa me yasanseni, che, Uhumiana wo ye macho, I feel the winny bomb so pena was a wine pony. Nanya men and sano. I feel the woman too too. Man, I must say me a junkie, and Sabusu Wukabi. Shame on you too. I feel the moon Sammy Macaboli Yonkey. Channel, can the name was a monkey. If I check, I just say you're hungry. Why are you young? I want a social busky. Me woo, ya the Nanya Metiasi. When the men will be an inviasi. Man, I made a bank so I flower, no will be a for handkerchief from the Pemini. I
said, who pay one your men in ID?
What else?
Nana Yamini, I work on a bebe mo. Swabi ponina tutu.
So my party don't lose God. Kawako my toy. Everybody sing it, hallelujah. Hallelujah. Everybody sing it, hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Make me sing, oh.
Oh yeah. I say happy sing, oh. Oh yeah. My win chimney 10 years, me wank a way back. My flop it, this be my payback. My enemies if a day God, men care so, I don't want to disobey God.
No.
My try some more they may be to prison. Wabra mo ni particular reason. Mo dream ho, me need to go for your meeting. Fatu wasum, I don't wanna be repeating. Yami na ebo me ho buying ti mo ni foko. Money no be problem. Ganu ni mi moto. Tu weni she me ho na meni ni mi shoto.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, Managing Editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Thomas Blondet, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, it is only when someone kills a madman that people would know that he has relatives. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The spread of violent extremism and terrorism pose significant challenges to Africa's security, long-term development goals, and democratic gains, said U.S. Ambassador to the African Union, Mary Beth Leonard. These threats to the global community, she warned, can only be addressed with a global response. Ambassador Leonard's remarks were made at a workshop earlier this month, co-hosted by the U.S. Mission to the African Union and the AU Commission on Preventing and Countering Violent Extremism. The workshop highlighted the use of public diplomacy resources such as exchanges and tech camps as successful examples of coordination to build security expertise within the AU, furthering the mission objective and advancing peace and security. The workshop supported the AU's 2002 Plan of Action for the Prevention and Combating of Terrorism, identified areas of potential collaboration, and charted a way for future engagement. On this continent, as elsewhere, a comprehensive approach where Africans are empowered to lead and devise their own solutions to address the drivers of violent extremism is critical to not only advancing the United States' foreign policy goals, but to realizing the aims of Agenda 2063, an African continent that is peaceful and prosperous. The United States stands as your steadfast partner in achieving these goals, said Ambassador Leonard. With almost 70% of Africans under 25 years of age, Ambassador Leonard noted, it is important that all stakeholders see youth as partners for peace rather than as the cause of conflict. Additionally, when women are included in peace and security efforts, in peacekeeping missions, peace negotiations, and political decision-making, communities are safer. I know from experience that the security challenges in Africa are formidable. But by marshaling our values, our partnerships, and our resources, I'm confident that together we can overcome them, she said. And I would like to end by reiterating that the United States remains a steadfast partner for Africa and continues to stand by the AU in its bold vision for sustainable peace and prosperity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.